You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight I'm talking about image. I'm talking about the state of our country. I'm talking about the stress that we're feeling during this political election and how some of us, some of us just feel a little overwhelmed. We feel like all the air is out of the room and we really don't know what's next. I think many of us are just kind of at that state of mind where we just didn't think it could get this bad. We didn't think that we could get to this level, and we thought that at some degree we would have a better space, a better dedication, and a more honest road for our country. You know, and no matter what side of the aisle you happen to be on, I think that you're feeling unfulfilled. And I think more than that, I think when you begin to start really looking around, we begin to realize that a lot of our rights and freedoms, well, are they hinging in the balance? Have they changed over time? It wasn't until the other day when I was reading some stuff on social media when I realized that freedom of speech, well, I don't know. Do we still have it? You see people making comments about how they feel or how they're going to vote, and you have automatically people bashing them and cussing them out and all kinds of stuff, calling them various names. And I don't feel like that's freedom of speech. And I'm not advocating that you have to vote for anybody at this state of mind or in this situation. But, you know, I do find it quite interesting. I want to talk about something just recently. I think it's something that I've been fighting for a long period of time. Really, honestly, it's something I fought about. And I want you to understand this fight. The fight that I've had, it's been not only a physical, but it's been an emotional fight. You know, throughout my entire life, you know, I was brought up and I was born with a condition that nobody understood. And I was in and out of the hospital for about 300 days out of the year. And this lasted for a good part of my life. I went through a lot of trauma as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult, all the way until my mid to late 20s. And, you know, right now I have things under control, but there was a lot of scare times. There was a lot of stuff that I went through that really taught me the value of this life. It taught me what's important and what's really not important. And it taught me the ability to look through and see things in a more clear perspective based on certain values, but more than values, based on what truly, truly, truly matters when you look at the big picture of why we're here. And I know recently with this election coming up and all the primaries and then all the national conventions and now all the campaigning and the raising of funds and everything else, I think that a lot of people are, well, scared about the future. They recently came out with a report a couple of days ago that there's a restaurant recession. That people are just not eating out right now. That people are staying home. I don't know about you, but in the last few weeks, since the national conventions, I've seen less cars on the road, it seems like, during the weekends and nights. And I don't know. I feel that a lot of people are kind of waiting this out. But it's very interesting. There's groups of people, and it seems very odd because it seems like nowadays people can only talk in a small area, in a confined space, in a private office or in a speakeasy type bar where they can talk amongst their friends and keep it quiet. It seems like people don't even feel comfortable about sharing their views anymore on social media because they're not allowed to. I find that interesting as well. You know, I like to listen and I like to talk and ask questions of folks that, you know, have this passion and have this yearning to get some sort of truth out. And one of the biggest things that I've been learning lately is style and image. And I used to fight against that. And that's what I was talking about. Is I used to fight against that style and image because I felt like it's almost false. I feel like you should be able to respect and love somebody, and it doesn't matter what they wear. It doesn't matter their makeup or their clothing. It doesn't matter the type of watch or shoes that they have. But, you know, I'm starting to think that in this world, that really matters to most people. And maybe it's just because of all the years of grooming, of all the years of being told that that matters, of all the years and the imagery that we see on TV and movies and media and publications and throughout our entire life, the way we're supposed to dress and carry ourselves and how we're supposed to look and how we're supposed to be. And I find that this imagery and this fanfare seems to carry over in everything. It seems to carry over on the red carpet. It seems to carry over in society, in charity life, in the balls, in the big parties. It seems to carry over in politics and in the election process. It seems that we fall for it as well. We don't really think about certain things, but we see the grandeur. We squint. We squint at the grandeur. And as we're squinting at the grandeur, we begin to buy into a lot of the hype. The hype is a very interesting thing because the hype always seems like it's a balloon that when you touch it, all the air comes out of it. Like a whoopee cushion that you sit on. That's what it feels like to me, hype is. But I think that oftentimes from a distance, hype looks really cool. Hype looks really interesting and engaging, and that's where the party is, and that's where things are. And I think that politically, our country is experiencing some of the biggest hype that it's ever experienced. And I feel like we, as a country, are kind of losing a part of ourselves. And I know that this broadcast runs on stations, and I know it's a worldwide broadcast as well. So I know that some of you out there are saying, Ashley, I don't live in the United States. So really tell me more. And so I'm going to talk to you right now. The thing about the United States is that it was a country that was created with some founding fathers, and the founding fathers created a document called the Constitution. And this Constitution was like, you know, a bill. It was like laws and rules, basically, of how government can and cannot act, about what the freedoms that were allowed. And the forefathers wanted to keep the freedoms of this country because it was the new world. It was the free world. And on the money, the currency that we currently use in the United States, the dollar bill, and on that bill says, "In God we trust." And I'm not endorsing individual religions at this time. However, I believe in God. And our country was formulated on it as well. And I don't know about you, but I do feel like we're getting farther and farther and farther away from what this country was designed to be. It was designed to be a free place where people could come and live, where you could immigrate from all over the world and come here and get citizenship and live here and raise a family and get a job and start a career, start a business and thrive. And you have to work hard, but in that process, you're creating something. And, you know, it's interesting. My grandmother came over and my grandfather came over on from Italy and from France. And they came by and they came to Ellis Island, and their names are there on the wall, on the memorandum, on the concept, and they have their names there, and it's a big deal. This was a country for freedom, for peace. And I just feel like we're kind of moving away from that. And I feel that a lot of us feel that way. And I bet a lot of my listeners right now feel that, you know, your voice isn't heard. You're seeing this stuff going down in history and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening in my country. I can't believe this is happening. I thought this happened in other countries. I thought this happened in corrupt countries. I thought this happened like this. Why is this happening now in my country? And it's something that we all have to look at. And it's something that a lot of us are scared to even acknowledge because you know what? It sucks. And I think most of us are wondering, what can we do to change the current situation we're in? Will it get any worse or will it get better? I reached out to Michael Moore with No Word, and I reached out to Dinesh D'Souza. And Dinesh D'Souza decided to come on the Live Your True Life Perspectives and discuss his new film and book, Hillary's America. Stay tuned. I'll be interviewing Dinesh right here on Live Your True Life Perspectives. And guess what? Your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time. And well, you know, I'll be back this time in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess, talking about the State of the Union. The stress that we're all kind of dealing with when it comes to the pomp and circumstance, and better yet, how do we go on with our day-to-day life? I'll be talking more about that here in the hour, but joining me right now on Live Your True Life Perspectives is Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh wrote the book and has debuted the film Hillary's America. Dinesh D'Souza joins us here live on Live Your True Life Perspectives.
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Dinesh, let's talk about Hillary's America. Tell me more about this film.
It's both a book and a movie. And the book is in stores. The movie is in now 1,200 theaters across the country. And it's the story of Hillary and of the Democratic Party. And it's an untold story. And it's a story that runs against the story that we're hearing out of Philadelphia at the Democratic Convention. So the official story is the Democratic Party is the party of the ordinary man. It's been fighting for little guys and minorities and for emancipation and civil rights and women's suffrage and immigrants. Now, all of this is propaganda. The truth is the Democratic Party hasn't done any of that. In fact, it fought in defense of slavery. It enacted all the segregation laws that were in the United States were enacted by Democratic legislatures. There's no exception to that rule. The Democrats were the party of the Ku Klux Klan. They worked to block immigrants from coming to this country. They've also been the party that opposed women's suffrage. They fought it for 25 years. They lost in Congress. Then they fought it in the states. They lost again. So this is the actual history of the Democratic Party, which has been kind of covered up by progressive historians. And so I put it all in the movie. I have all the supporting documentation in the book. It's kind of a 1-2 punch. And it's causing a big stir because, it, in a way, it is the counter-narrative to the propaganda coming out of Philadelphia.
I have some friends, Dinesh, from all over the world that have immigrated here. And one of the things that they say that they dislike is when they see political systems using immigrants as basically kind of mascots almost to, it's almost like a dog and pony show. And I know that you are from Bombay and I know that your wife is from, I think, Central or South America. Tell me how you feel about this current situation.
And you know, that, and that's my story. I'm an immigrant from Bombay, India. My wife is an immigrant from Venezuela. So we've grown up in countries that were run in, as socialist experiments. We've grown up in countries where there's a lot of corruption, where there are sort of gangs that run the country, where people go into politics to get rich. And then we come to America and we see, wow, this is actually happening all over again. Because look at the Clintons. I mean, we've had obviously presidents in America who were wealthy, but most of them were wealthy before they became president. FDR was wealthy beforehand. JFK was wealthy beforehand. The Clintons come into politics, they have no money, and they go from $0 to $300 million in a few years, and their foundation has $3 billion. Now, how do you do that if you haven't invented the iPhone, you haven't started any kind of business, you're on a government salary? How do you make that kind of money? And the answer is they do it by sort of selling off public policy. They use their leverage and their influence to get people to give them money in exchange for favors. So this is exactly what I'm used to in India, and this is the kind of stuff that I think represents the corruption of the American experiment and the corruption of the American dream.
You know, I was talking earlier, Dinesh, about how I feel that image and appeal, the way things look and the fanfare and the carnival of it all, seems to color people's thought processes. It's kind of like a dog and pony show. I feel like there's a lot of symbols and a lot of colors and a lot of stuff and a lot of fanfare, but I don't really see substance across the board.
Well, the Democrats are the masters of symbolism, and they're the masters of theater. And that's because they dominate three of the very powerful cultural institutions of our culture. Number one, academia. Number two, Hollywood. And number three, the media. Now, if you have Hollywood, Hollywood is really good at putting on, if you will, a show, an entertainment show. And the Democrats, so they put on this kind of parade. And you know, if they were, let's make history and so on. This is their whole thing. And now a lot of people get conned by it because they think, oh, yeah, I can make history by voting for Hillary. Now, think about it. I mean, obviously, Hillary is the worst representative of her gender you could possibly pick to symbolize this great achievement, because there have been strong leaders in the world before: Golda Meir in Israel, Indira Gandhi in India, Margaret Thatcher in Britain. It would be great for America to have a woman president. But this one, I mean, what a bad message that sends, because, I'm sorry, Hillary is a woman who's accomplished almost nothing. You'd be almost hard-pressed to say one thing that she's accomplished her whole life. As senator, there's not a single bill that she put forward that was kind of recognizable or important. When she was Secretary of State, not a single major treaty, not even a single meeting or conference that's even memorable. The only things that we remember are her massive screw-ups, all the various scandals from Benghazi to Travelgate, Filegate, Whitewater. The Clintons were renting out the Lincoln bedroom. They were selling presidential pardons to big-time felons and racketeers. I mean, this is the actual legacy of this duo.
It's kind of sad because as a kid, I remember, and I still feel this way, I still want to run for president, and I still want to win. And it's like, I look and I feel like I really feel like we've got to get to some sort of change in our society. I mean, where is it? Where are the real people? Where are the honest people when it comes to this? And I feel like a lot of us who know what's going on, and we're not maybe buying into all the fanfare, it's just kind of getting, you know, you have two sides of the story. You have some people that I keep believing in the positive that things are going to change. I think I keep believing in the process that we're going to have enough of it and eventually people are going to unite and figure out the situation. But, I mean, what do you think is going to happen here in the next 4 years? What's your thought process on this?
I mean, I do think it is unfortunate our process has degenerated. When I was in my teens, I looked up to all these sort of luminaries, these intellectual figures and statesmen, people like Milton Friedman or Friedrich Hayek or William F. Buckley, Irving Kristol, people who are really thinkers, and then also people like Howard Baker, who was head of the Senate, James Baker, Secretary of State. I mean, these were sort of statesmen, George Shultz. And now I look at the horizon, and it's hard-pressed to find people of comparable stature, comparable intellectual stature, comparable political stature. So it's hard for me to admit, but it does seem like we've seen a kind of falling off in the American standard. We're getting a lower caliber of statesmen out there. I don't know quite why that is, but this is a little bit of also why I'm trying to make movies, because I'm trying to alert people, reach more people than would normally read my books. And I have the book. I mean, Hillary's America is a book also, and the book has all the substantiation that's necessary for the movie. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch, but the movies are a way to reach a wider audience.
I know that many of us have been looking around for, I don't know how long, the last 12 years, and there's been a lot of civil unrest, a lot of violence in the inner cities, A lot of domestic type terrorism in the way that there's a lot of violence. There's a lot of unrest. And I wonder, I ask you, Dinesh, do you think that because of the poverty level, has that caused this inner city violence? And do you think it has any direct relation to the Democratic Party?
We've created these terrible living environments in the inner city. Now, when I say we, I actually mean the Democratic Party, because when we look at inner city Oakland or Detroit, Chicago, Dallas, these inner cities, you can't find a Republican. I mean, they're Democratic mayors, Democratic city officials, Democratic school superintendents, and all the way down. So this is, I use the phrase in the movie, it's a provocative phrase, but I think it's accurate, the urban plantation, the urban plantation. And the reason I use the phrase is that these urban plantations resemble the old rural plantations, the slave plantations. So on a slave plantation, you'd find ramshackle dwellings. They used to be called the slave quarters. You would find the family structure all broken down, a lot of illegitimacy. You'd find a high degree of violence necessary to keep the plantation intact, because slavery is based on force. You'd find everybody has a meager living, that you can have health care, they call the doctor if you get sick, but no one gets ahead. There's no opportunity. There's no hope. It's kind of nihilistic, and there's a lot of despair. Well, if we fast forward 150 years, that is precisely the condition we see today in so many inner cities. And so the point I want to make in the movie is that history isn't just the past. The past lives on, admittedly sometimes in a transformed way, but it lives on in the present. And so when I talk about the bleak history of the Democratic Party, I'm not just talking about old stuff. I'm talking about stuff that's alive with us today.
I've always loved history, and I've always loved to look at how history has a tendency of repeating itself. Sometimes it can be painful, and other times it can be righteous. When we return, we'll be talking more with Dinesh D'Souza about Hillary America, more about the history of the Democratic Party, including some historical information about the Ku Klux Klan. And later on, I'm going to be talking about how we deal with all this, how we mitigate all this, how we deal with this in our mind, and how we come to some sort of sense of power, and we come to some sort of sense of peace. Stay tuned, because Live Your True Life Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. I feel that a lot of us are a little stressed out about this time. We're stressed out over the state of the union of our country, where we're heading, where we're going, and what's going to be the end result. Can we repair ourselves, or are we non-repairable? You get the point. Are we or are we not? And I think it's interesting, because I love history, and I love to get renditions of history as well as historical stuff that I never even thought about. And wildly enough, you know, history does repeat itself. Speaking of history, on the break, Dinesh was talking about how the KKK actually has connections and ties to the Democratic Party. I had no idea. Dinesh, tell us more about that.
Yeah, the Ku Klux Klan was founded in the late 19th century by Nathan Bedford Forrest. He was a Confederate general. He was also a delegate to the Democratic National Convention. And the Klan was founded basically not only to suppress blacks, but to fight the white Republicans that were coming to the South after the Civil War. The Klan then went defunct and had a major revival in the early 20th century. And the revival was driven by the Democratic president, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson actually screened a pro-Ku Klux Klan movie in the White House called Birth of a Nation. And this led to a Klan revival in not only in the South, but in the West and in the Midwest. And so the Democratic Party, the Klan, was sort of its domestic terrorist arm for 30 years. And so, you know, today when you say the Klan, you say slavery, you say segregation, many people, unbelievably stupidly, they think that's the Republican Party. No, that was actually the Democratic Party all the way, not only through the late 19th century, but for most of the 20th century. And then even if you look at the civil rights laws of the 1960s, the more Republicans proportionately voted for those laws, than Democrats. If the Democrats were the only party in Congress, those laws would not have passed.
Dinesh, I was going to ask you, you know, I know that in history, they've talked about how there was a party shift, about how the Democrats were once maybe possibly the Republicans and the Republicans were the Democrats. And I can't seem to find a lot of information on that. Is that true or is that false?
Well, there have been a couple of important changes, but they're not the changes that the progressives point to. The progressives claim, and this claim is completely false, it's called the big switch, that somehow the racist Democrats all became Republicans and the Democratic Party saw the light and became the friend of minorities. Now, that's all bogus. In fact, that whole case that the racist Democrats became Republicans all hinges on one guy, a Strom Thurmond. He was a Dixiecrat Democrat. He did become a Republican, but he's like the only case. There were hundreds of these Dixiecrat Democrats, and they all stayed in the Democratic Party. They never switched. Now, there were some changes that occurred that are very important. And one occurred in the 1930s, and that is that blacks who used to vote Republican began to vote increasingly Democratic. This was not because of race. It had nothing to do with civil rights. It basically had to do with the fact that blacks were in desperate straits in the Depression, and they did it because of the promises of the New Deal. We'll give you this, we'll give you that. So blacks were sort of almost bribed into moving over to the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party was racist through and through. It was the party of segregation and the Klan. And so blacks were sort of leaving the party of Lincoln and emancipation and joining the party of segregation and the Klan. So that was a switch, but a switch not due to race.
One of the biggest issues I find, I think, at this time and place that we're in this world is so much information, but even more than that, so much misinformation. I also find that everything is kind of chaotic. There's confusion. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I understand the social phenomena very well. I have a very good understanding of what white supremacy means, what fascism meant. And so all the silliness about, you know, Donald Trump crosses his arms and looks to the left and that makes him Mussolini. Or Donald Trump raises his hand to wave at somebody, that makes him Hitler. This is actually, you know, you can say, you may almost call it history for morons, because this is playing fast and loose with things that are actually very important. Now, in fact, there was a big argument about fascism in the 1930s, and there were a lot of leading Democrats who were actually very sympathetic to it. A young JFK went to Nazi Germany in the 30s and he came back full of praise of Hitler. FDR admired Mussolini and sent members of his brain trust to study Italian fascism to bring some of those ideas over here. Mussolini actually reviewed FDR's book in a Italian magazine and he goes, "This guy's great. He's one of us. He's a fascist." Now, this is actually part of the historical record, and progressives are kind of embarrassed by it. So after World War II, they tried to keep this stuff out of the textbooks because this is part of the fight over historical meaning. What I do in my books and my movies is I never touch material that is sort of open to question. I never go down roads that are dubious where there's no evidence. The stuff I cover is completely backed up historically. It can easily be verified on an iPhone in 5 minutes by just Googling the stuff I'm talking about. And so that's why these movies are so controversial and the left gets so upset about them, not because the stuff I say is false, but because it's true.
I think a lot of us feel that throughout this election so far, there's been a lot of mudslinging, a lot of name calling. I've heard the word racist more than a million times. I've heard the word Nazi. I've heard all kinds of stuff. I think this is one of the, well, some people would say the worst. I might say the toughest elections so far. What do you think?
Well, I do think that this one is more vicious than usual. Now, in American history, we have had some very vicious elections. In fact, some of the very early elections, including the one in 1800 with Jefferson, were very acrimonious. Now, that being said, yes, I think that this stuff about, you know, I mean, I look at Trump and I say, well, okay, what has he done that's so bad? Well, he called this judge who's of Mexican descent a Mexican. Now, I'm of Asian Indian descent. If you called me an Indian, I mean, obviously, I'm an American citizen of Indian descent. I might feel a little bit miffed or prefer you call me an Indian American or whatever, but insensitive is not the same thing as racist. I mean, Trump sometimes shoots off his mouth and says things, but there's a huge difference between speaking candidly and sometimes getting it wrong and bigotry. I mean, bigotry actually involves taking people, judging them by the content of their, by the color of their skin, refusing to give them jobs, beating them, hanging them, lynching them. This is the history of racism. It's not like, oh, the guy called me an Indian, therefore he's a racist. I mean, that's just stupid. And so with Trump, there are a lot of question marks around that guy. I mean, he's obviously an outsider. That's his strength. It's also his weakness. We don't know what he would do in every exact situation. But so what? I mean, if the Trump door has a lot of question marks on it, the Hillary door, we know what she would do. I mean, Hillary has been up to a lot of crooked stuff through the years, going back to the Arkansas days. So if one door for me has question marks and the other door is marked a known crook, I kind of know which door I want to go through.
I think that most of us who love the country that we live in, the United States, and I know that some people that are listening to the show do not live in the United States, and I totally understand that. And you have pride for your country, and just like I have pride for my country, and I have pride for everybody in it, I have pride for the world for that matter. And I feel, though, that the United States obviously was based and created by the Constitution. And in that Constitution, we should have a unified country. In that Constitution, we should have freedom of speech. In that Constitution, we should have equal rights. I feel like we're moving away from that, like we're floating away from that, maybe like we're being pushed away from that. So, Dinesh, how is it that you think that we can get back to having a real democracy?
Yeah, I do. I think the way to do that, the way to create a unified country in which we all have equal rights, is to remember that our rights are asserted against the government. If you read the Bill of Rights, Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of speech. Congress shall make no law establishing a religion, and so on. Here's my point. If our rights are exerted against the government, then we protect our rights by limiting government power. On the other hand, if our rights are asserted against each other, then it's a formula for divisiveness and chaos. Imagine if for me to get my rights, I've got to reach into your pocket and take half of your paycheck. Well, you're going to feel super annoyed by that, and you're going to feel like, I don't want to give you those rights because those rights are at my expense. And so that's what the Democrats do, is they define rights as claims on other people. I have a right to a minimum wage. Well, what does that mean? That means that I get to force my employer to pay me $15 an hour, regardless of whether I'm contributing anything. I may be contributing $2 an hour, but I'm demanding $15. Why? Because that's the minimum wage, because I have a right to that, because otherwise I can't live the way I want to. I mean, this is just complete madness. But this is how the Democrats operate. They mandate things. They force people to do things that they don't want to do. They make you buy health care you don't want to buy, and they confiscate people's hard-earned money and then give it to other people in the name of social justice. Where's the social justice? If you look at the poorest people in our society, they're still poor. We've spent trillions of dollars on them. And meanwhile, this kind of overclass, which I've been seeing in Philadelphia the last few days, these are the lords of the liberal plantation, walking around with name tags, feeling super self-important. None of them produce anything, but what they do is confiscate other people's resources and then hand them around and act that they are as if they are basically the people everyone should be thankful to.
When Live Your True Life Perspectives returns, we'll be talking more with Dinesh. Check out the website, AshleyBurgess.com, Ashley, BERGES.com. Listen to the show on radio 6 days a week. Also, check it nationally and internationally on iHeartRadio. We have our own station. Just go to iHeart, click in Ashley. You'll find Live Your True Life Perspectives. Go to Spreaker, go to Stitcher, go to Google Play. Also, check out the website as well and follow us on Facebook, where we're doing a live conversation right now. Live Your True Life Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess. Be back this time and, well, two shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and sound.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, I'm joined by Dinesh D'Souza, the creator, the producer of Hillary's America. And we've been talking about the situation, the state of our union, the state of our country, the election process, and everything that you and I have been seeing on TV, everything that's been weighing on us, stressing us out, thinking about it at work, at night. taking a shower in the morning, heading to work, wondering, are we powerless? Is this going to continue? What can we do about the state of our country right now? And I want to ask Denisha this point because it's been interesting on both sides. But, you know, with the Bernie Sanders situation and him kind of stepping down, I just found some of the actions to possibly feel, maybe it just feels that way or appears that way to me. And it could just be, you know, the media. Well, it feels like it was almost, I don't know, I just don't feel the authenticity of the situation. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dinesh?
I mean, think about this. You've got a party. It's called the Democratic Party. If the one thing they do, you think it would be run a democratic election, i.e. a fair election. Can't do it. They're running a Soviet-style election right here in America. You've got two candidates. Now, Hillary's the favorite. She should be able to beat Sanders. Sanders has been kind of an out-of-work socialist, you know, sleeping on his neighbor's couch for 20 years. So, but yet, they can't do it. They have to cheat. And so what they do is they collude between the Democratic National Committee and Hillary to put their thumb on the scale to basically slander Sanders. And look at all the stuff that they're calling these people. I mean, if you look at the emails, this great Democratic Party, which pretends to be the party of minorities and so on, their outreach to Hispanics, they call it the Taco Bell Initiative. They're insulting homosexuals. They want to make fun of the fact that Sanders is not a religious believer. So this is how these people talk in private. They pretend to be so tolerant and inclusive, but the bigotry runs deep within the party. And then, of course, if you read Hillary's America, the book and the movie, you see that this bigotry is the way that the Democratic Party developed. The Democratic Party was the party of white supremacy. It was the party of slavery. So the bigotry is continuous with that history.
Let's shift to Hollywood just a second. You know, recently Clint Eastwood came out talking about the state of affairs and how we're all just a bunch of babies and that political correctness has gotten out of hand. And yes, he used the P word. Okay, I got it. But, you know, let's use babies for right now. And it's interesting how a lot of the Hollywood folks, a lot of the Hollywood elite do not talk about their political journey. And even some may say that they have lost their jobs. They might be demoted. They might even, you know, lose their position. They feel scared on honestly coming out, I guess, of what we call the Republican closet.
I mean, just think how crazy that is. How crazy it is that if you are in Hollywood, you're a screenwriter, you're a music guy, you're a cinematographer, you have to be, quote, in the closet. You have to hide. You have to go to secret meetings wearing sunglasses and a disguise, because if people spotted you, you wouldn't get work again. I mean, what is this? We're living in America. You think that that in a country of free speech, in a country of inclusion and diversity, where you'd want to have a clash of ideas, you'd want to have people having different perspectives, this kind of nonsense wouldn't go on. But ironically, the very people who say they're on the left, they say they're for free speech, they say they're for civil liberties, for civil rights, they don't actually really believe those things. Basically, if you're against them, they want to get rid of you. They want to snuff you out. They want to push you off the stage. And so this kind of intolerance, I think, has no place in American politics.
I feel that political correctness has taken over.
It's taken over, yes. And I think this is what I like about Trump the most, is the political incorrectness of Trump, where he doesn't play by the rules. He's willing to say it like he sees it. He might be wrong at times, but nevertheless, the candor is refreshing. And I think he's helping to widen the parameters of acceptable debate, and that's a good thing.
Well, I just feel like our government could be so much better if we had outside the box, outside the system, people running for the president. If we could have term limits on Congress, period, end of story. If everybody got audited when they came out of Congress or out of the White House. You know, I just think there's certain things that we could put into place that we could really change the geography of our political system. You know, however, I mean, you know, unfortunately, the powers to be that make the laws are the ones in the system right now. You know, and so how do we change
it? Yeah, and we've got to figure out a way to stop this renting out of American policy for money, because it's one thing if you make money and then run for office, but the very idea that you can go into office broke and then accumulate tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, becoming a billionaire through politics is not what we want in America.
And Dinesh, leave us one lasting perspective and thought for the Live Your True Life listeners.
Well, at the end of the day, well, we get the government we deserve. So, I'd urge people, by the way, if you want to see the movie Hillary's America, go to hillarysamericathemovie.com. That's the website. You can watch a trailer. You can plug in your zip code. It'll tell you where the movie is playing near you. And then an accompanying book, Hillary's America, which is available everywhere, that discusses the themes that are in the movie.
Thank you, Dinesh, for coming on live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I look forward to having you on in the future.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed the interview. Well, thank you so much.
And you have now it's up to us, right? It's up to us to deal with the situation at hand. It's up to us to put things into perspective, to do the right thing. We, the voting party, to make a decision. And one side of the aisle or the other, we need to make a choice based on fact, on truth, on what's right for our future, and thinking about the future society, our kids growing up, and thinking about their kids growing up, and thinking about all this, and what do we do now to ensure the freedoms and the rights of our kids? And I think we need to look at that long-term view, because when we look at things small and short-sighted, we tend to make bad decisions. And I know that often during this time of the year, especially on election year, it gets really stressful for a lot of us. It can be difficult to deal with. We can be overwhelmed by the stress level because we feel like we're powerless. We feel like our vote doesn't count, like nobody's listening to what we have to say. And I know that oftentimes you have friends that have different viewpoints than you do. And some of those viewpoints are, factual, or at least a lot of research has gone into those viewpoints, and other of those viewpoints have absolutely no resources and research done. And I know that oftentimes that can even make you go a little out of your mind, because you're trying to assimilate a truth, trying to find an honest step, trying to make the right choice for yourself and your children and the future of our planet. And I know that when we get to this big picture, it gets stressful. It gets scary. It gets what? Overwhelming. And we feel as if we have no power. And so before I leave tonight, before Live Your True Life packs up until another day and another show, I want to leave you with some tips that are going to really help you lessen the anxiety and create more balance. Less anxiety, more balance, A to B. During these times, we get a lot of anxiety and stress because we don't know what to do next. We see the news, we go to YouTube, we watch videos, we read 5, 10, 15 different types of newspapers, different online media, different reporters, different things, and we combine this together to create a truth of what we know. And I know that some of you are saying, yes, I do that, but most people don't do that. And I understand that most people take things for face value. They drink the Kool-Aid. But I think we have to take a step back and do what's right and do what you have in your power. If it's to help people individually, to talk with people, to educate them, you've got to step up to the plate and do it. I think now more than ever is the time to come out and discuss our true feelings. I think hiding does nothing. I know that I've heard some of you talk about you don't want to talk about it because you're in fear of losing your job, or fear of things that could happen, or losing friends, or being mocked, or whatever. And I think that we have to look at it past the party selections, and we need to begin to open the discussion about what matters, the values we have, the values that matter in our life, and what we want to see a leader have. What values have to be there to create a leader? Wonderful show tonight. In God we trust. In God I trust. Check out the website, ashleyburgess.com. Check out the latest stuff on there. It's really great. Check out iHeart, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spreaker. Listen to us 6 days a week on Terrestrial Radio. And go to the website, click on the contact page, and send me a message if you'd like to talk about anything or have an idea for a show. Stay tuned, because Live Your True Life Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time. Be back this time. Well, be back this time in three shakes.